Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Music Therapy Show with Janice Harris, broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Harris, a music therapist from Dallas, Texas. I'm the host and producer of the Music Therapy Show, and I'm glad you've joined us. Today is Saturday, June 13th, 2009. The Music Therapy Show comes to you live every Saturday at 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central Time. If you have questions or comments about music therapy, call in at 646-652-2850. That's 646-652-2850, and I'd love to hear from you today. You can also join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com. If you're listening live, take a moment to register with Blog Talk Radio so that you can make comments in the chat room and ask questions. You can also sign up for a mailing list to receive announcements about the show. I send out just one email a week to announce the topic and to provide some tips or news about music therapy. To join the list, send me an email with MT Show in the subject line. My email is janice@heartbeatmusictherapy.net. The Music Therapy Show is a place to talk about music therapy and share experiences with music as therapy. I would like people to call in for information about how to use music in their lives and to enhance their capabilities. I'd also like to discuss music therapy research and techniques, so if you have any questions or comments about music therapy, please call in at 646-652-2850. I'm Janice Harris, a board-certified music therapist with over 13 years of experience with a variety of settings and populations. The show took a holiday the last 2 weeks so that I could attend to some professional and personal business, but there are plenty of shows in the archives for you to listen to at any time. You can also subscribe to the show through iTunes. First, I'd like to tell you about a special opportunity. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum would like to invite music therapists to their annual Summer Teacher Institute, Electrifying the Classroom. This week-long institute, happening June 22nd through 26, 2009, includes overviews of the dynamic history of rock and roll, case studies of successful programs for students in both traditional and non-traditional instructional settings, presentations, performances, and, of course, museum tours. The Institute will be open to music therapists Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 2:45 p.m., and Friday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. A special Hall of Fame series event is also scheduled for that Wednesday, June 24th at 7 p.m. Thanks to a generous grant from the PNC Grow Up Great program, registration for music therapists is only $50. For more information about the Summer Teacher Institute, visit rockhall.com, and a special registration page has been created for music therapists at rockhall.com/forms/music-therapists. Registration is limited, so hurry and sign up. Thank you, Ed Gallagher from the Beck Center, for sending in that announcement. Now, my guest for this week is Dr. Charles Carlos Gorgi, a board-certified music therapist and New York State-licensed creative arts therapist with 20 years of hospice experience. He has also worked in various nursing homes and published articles on psychology, disability, and religion. Check out his website at musicishope.org. Carlos, welcome to the Music Therapy Show. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Janice, thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So how did you decide to become a music therapist?
Okay, that's an interesting story. I started from the psychology field. I had done a lot of psychological counseling and began working with elderly clients, and I happened to be a musician as well, and I just started incorporating music into the practice, and I found that using music, I was able to reach a lot of people whom I could not reach just through purely verbal means, especially with the elderly and the prevalence of dementia, that many who could not respond verbally in a coherent way had very strong responses to music, even to the extent where music could become a reciprocal communication between me and that person. And I just became so fascinated with the possibilities of music in clinical work that I wanted to explore the furthest limits to where music could reach. So I had been hearing about music therapy as I was doing this work, and people were telling me, oh, are you a music therapist, or did you think about becoming one? And I said, well, this is something I should explore. So I did become a music therapist. I'm board certified and state licensed, and began working in nursing homes, then went for a number of years into hospice, just seeming that is about the furthest frontier where I could see music reaching as far as communicating with people who were seriously impaired. And now I'm back into the nursing home field, and that's pretty much my odyssey.
That's a great story. I had started out in nursing homes too, of course, as a music therapist, and then left that discipline or that area for a while and came back to it as well. I love that population.
Yeah.
So where did you receive your education?
Well, mostly at New York University. That's where I got my master's degree, both in music and in music therapy. And I also have a PhD in psychology, which is not directly related to music, but it helps in what I do, which I got from International College in Los Angeles. And but my most recent work is the music therapy work. I came into music therapy through the route of psychology, and eventually just ended up combining the two.
I think they do combine really well. And you work primarily in hospice right now, is that correct?
I did work in hospice for over the past decade, but I recently went back into the nursing home field.
Oh, okay. And so I've been looking at your website, and you have a lot of fascinating articles about the work that you've done with your clients, and so I highly recommend that people go check that out because the stories are amazing. But you have an approach to music therapy that you call pastoral music therapy. Is this a term that you coined?
Yes.
Okay.
It just evolved. Actually, it began with my music therapy studies and evolved over the kind of work that I've done. When I was writing my music therapy thesis, which is entitled The Importance of Love in Music Therapy, which I'm really grateful that they let me use that topic because it's been very meaningful to me and in the underpinning of my work. My thesis advisor, Ken Agin, he was great. He challenged me. He said, well, I really like your thesis, but before I accept it, I'd like you to write an additional chapter looking towards the future as you see it. So I thought about, well, what chapter would I add to what I've written? And the chapter that I added, I called Music Therapy as Pastoral Care. And that started me into crystallizing my thought about how music therapy can become an extension of pastoral care. So in my thesis, I actually have a definition of it, which is that pastoral music therapy is the use of music to enter and to affirm the client's perceptual world, to maintain a presence with the client over time, to care for the client's emotional and spiritual needs in all phases of the client's life, through health, sickness, and even to the moment of death. And I was very fortunate to have had the opportunity to develop this approach in my years working in hospice. I worked in the pastoral care office as part of the team with the chaplains and coordinated the memorial services that they had there, both the memorial masses and the interfaith services. I became responsible for planning them, and I felt that the work that I did there was very much in tune and kind of a supplementary to the pastoral care work that hospice was offering. And I think I even had some advantages because my approach is totally non-sectarian. I support people of different faiths and also of no particular faith. It's kind of music as a ministry, but with no separation barriers. And the real joy of doing that work, especially in New York City, where you have so many diverse populations, is being able to cross those barriers of culture and faith tradition that so often divide us, but through music therapy, to be able to cross those barriers and be with people from different communities, different ethnic groups, different language groups, and just build bridges to people from completely different walks of life, that has been part of the greatest joy of this work for me.
Now, one of my favorite stories that that I read on your website was the one about Myra.
Yes.
You remember that story? Tell a little bit about Myra and how you worked with her.
Yeah, that was one of the most moving stories. The first time I encountered Myra, you could not miss her. She was on our inpatient hospice unit, and her screams were so loud, you could hear them all the way at the other end of the floor. She was quite intimidating. She suffered from schizophrenia as well as terminal cancer. And her behavior was unpredictable, to say the least. And I remember the first night that I actually had direct contact with her, the chaplain had gone in there to try to see her first. And Myra just started screaming so loudly that she scared the chaplain right out of the room. So I was thinking, okay, you never know what's going to happen. Let me go in there and see what I'll find. And I just let Myra scream as much as she wanted. I just sat there in the background. Sometimes I try to maybe blend in my voice with it to let her know that I'm a non-threatening presence. And nothing really dramatic happened that first night. But over time, I just kept persisting. And gradually was able to form a relationship with her, which was completely nonverbal because Myra had no coherent speech. But I did feel a trust gradually starting to build. At first, for example, Myra would not want to be touched. I had to keep my distance. If I came too close to her, she'd start really with the screaming really loud. But gradually, that started to diminish. There were some key moments. One key moment was when she actually let me hold her hand. Another one was further down when I was just working with her, singing softly, some things that I had begun to discover that she would like. And she took off her wristwatch from one hand and just gave it to me, just put it in my hand. And to me, that just signaled the gift of trust, that she actually just gave me this personal possession. So I remember... Well, first I should mention that I worked very much, I try in this work to really bring the families into it as much as I can because they are so tremendously important and they also can gain a sense of hope from feeling connected to their loved ones through music. And Myra's daughter had come in from California to be with Myra and I worked, the two of us became a team working together, and the daughter also could play the guitar, so I had a guitar that I lent her to play during those times when I wasn't there, and she could also just create a healing energy, a loving energy in the room surrounding Myra to encourage her trust. So this just very gradually evolved, and Myra's defenses gradually relaxed to the point where it was, at the end, one of the most peaceful deaths that I've ever witnessed in the hospice. And from someone who was so tormented by panic and fear, the first time I encountered her, one would never have thought that her story would have ended that way. But it was just a great blessing to be able to witness that. And to see the power of music in being able to bridge that divide and to create an atmosphere of trust and of love and of connection to her loved one as well, and all of these things that we tried to just make a safe place for Myra at the end of her journey on Earth.
Yeah, and that whole story was just so captivating. I couldn't stop reading it. And for those of you that haven't seen that yet, you can find that story in the article of musicishope.org. And I thought it was really beautiful that the daughter shared some of her journal with you.
Yeah.
That you sent to that article. It was really a neat addition to that story. So how is pastoral music therapy different from other music therapy approaches?
Well, I don't like to compare myself too much with others. I can only speak for myself. But first of all, my approach is cross-cultural. And I, just as verbal languages are not universal, music really is not a universal language either. There are many different musical languages which one needs to learn to speak. Also, being bilingual is a great asset, especially in a cosmopolitan city like New York. I also have a strong background in both Judaism and Christianity. I've also studied Buddhism. So I try, when the person has faith, as a person of faith, to use their faith to support them and to activate it as a resource. I can just give one example of a Buddhist patient that I had, a very lovely lady who had been a hairdresser and I think did her own job with so much love that she had many friends after, very concerned about her. But she went through her decline and her own confrontation with the fears and anxieties that go with that. And she was having trouble at one point finding in her faith an anchor to give her hope to something eternal that would really be outlasting death. Of course, the Buddhists have the belief in reincarnation, but she was looking for something in addition to that, something more, something that maybe in the more Western tradition we would call eternal. And through my own studies of Buddhism, I knew the kind of teaching that would speak to her, and I found a sermon by the Buddha. It's called the Udana Sutta, and it has to do with the Buddhists talking about there being a reality beyond this one, an enduring reality, an unborn, uncreated, undying. And I just copied that sermon for her, and I brought it to her, and it was of great support to her as well. Using her own faith to support her, you always try to help the person from where they are and never impose anything external or anything of your own, but you help that person find their own resources and maybe help them, support them. And I remember the very last day of her life, her daughter was there, also a wonderful, loving individual, and she asked me to play this music on the American Indian flute that I have, which of course is a different tradition, but yet it was the kind of atmosphere that she really related to and created that a spiritual, haunting music that she liked. And those were the sounds of that flute were the sounds that the final sounds that she heard as she as she passed away, and her daughter and her friends were surrounding her on her bed, and it was a very peaceful, awesome atmosphere. I could tell you many stories about just helping faith to strengthen, help people, support them, and I learn so much, too, from patients that have this strong faith resource and how it makes such a great difference in their dealing with the fears that go along with facing sickness and death. I don't mean to give the impression that it's all religion. It's not. It really depends on the person's individual need and their background. But yet when faith is available to draw upon as a pastoral music therapy approach, I really do respect that and try to use it to the full.
I think that approach is very useful and unique. And you said that your master's thesis was on the importance of love in music therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also available on your website, musicishope.org, in the articles section. And you state in your master's, in your thesis, that love is the most potent healing factor in therapy.
Right.
So can you describe what you mean by this? And
yes.
How is this different from countertransference?
That is an excellent question, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I have a special definition of love, which I think makes it clear how love can exist without countertransference. My definition of love is the awareness of the individuality of the other. So it's really based upon awareness. And my belief, and I think it's been borne out in what I've experienced, is that being aware of the other as a unique individual in their own right on a deep level, a sense of wish for the person's well-being, those senses that we often experience with love, naturally arise. And it's different from countertransference because countertransference is not based on awareness of the other. It's based upon projection of your own experience onto the other. So it is exactly the opposite of what I am intending by love. And that's why I try, both in my master's thesis and in the book that I've recently written, about which there's also information on my website, to very carefully explore that definition of love, what it means, and how it goes far beyond the personal ideas of love or love based upon personal need or projection of desire or purely emotional response that popularly we may think of as love. But
great.
Go
ahead, Carlos.
I have found great value in looking at love from that different direction, and I have to say that it is really the most important keystone of my theoretical base for doing this work. As untheoretical as it may sound, it really is not. I don't think that this work would really work if love were not behind it. And I remember I had one family member who just asked me, how is it you can just work every day with dying people and you don't get burned out? And my just immediate response was, well, I'm just here every day sharing love with people, and you can't possibly get burned out doing that.
That's so true. And I think that, I know as a therapist, I do love my clients, but it's difficult to acknowledge that without thinking, I don't want anyone to misinterpret that, or,
exactly.
You know, I don't want to head down that countertransference road, which, can you describe what countertransference is, just in case
right.
We have people that aren't therapists listening?
Right. Well, first I want to say I think that is why in my writing, in my book, I try to go into so much detail about what this understanding of love entails, just so that it's crystal clear that it is not what we associate with countertransference, and that when one understands it clearly, it actually becomes a therapeutic aid that that I have found indispensable. Countertransference really is based upon the projection of one's own experience. Let's say a client that you're working with may set off something in you, maybe remind you of somebody from your own past, and elicit a response, an emotional response that really is something, you're responding to something in your own past, but you think you're responding to the client. And that really can mess up the therapy and may make it really difficult for you to address the client's real need and real issues, because you're not really seeing the client, you're seeing some figure from your past. Understanding love in the way that I've described, I think, helps to cut through that, because, first of all, in order to love is a discipline when understood this way, and one has to really examine oneself all the time, observe oneself to really know where the boundaries are, know where you end and where the other person begins, and become aware of your projections, become aware of your past experiences, become aware of your emotional reactions, so that your awareness of the other is not interfered with, because love, spiritual love, only exists through awareness of the other. Countertransference blocks awareness of the other. So countertransference actually interferes with love.
That's a great explanation. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Carlos. And if you would ever like to come back, please do. I'd love to have you back on. We have just a few minutes left of the show, so tell us how we can get in contact with you and learn more about past music therapy and find your book.
You can write to my email address on the website. It's given on the website, but it is Carlos, C-A-R-L-O-S, at musicishope, that's as one word, musicishope, M-U-S-I-C-I-S-H-O-P-E .org. And I'll get your email, and the website itself is www.musicishope.org. One word, no punctuation.
And then right at the bottom of that page is a link on how to get your book. So tell us about that book.
Well, the book is called Judeo-Christianity, The Discovery of Faith. It's a detailed exploration of faith. It has many examples in there from my hospice work of patients whose faith has helped them. But it's really looking at the point of intersection between Judaism and Christianity. And if we look at that, what can we learn about faith that through which we understand that faith is much more profound concept than just belief in something? It's not just belief. It's a much deeper idea that has to do with the awareness of an eternal reality that helps us cope with our fears and the difficulties that we inevitably face in the suffering of life.
Well, Carlos, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate that. Everyone, go check out his website at musicishope.org. And we're out of time for today's show. Thank you so much for joining me for this show, Saturday, June 13th, 2009. During the Music Therapy Show with Janice Harris on Blog Talk Radio. As always, I hope it was educational and enjoyable. It was really great talking with you today. Next week, my guest will be Kimberly Moore, founder and director of Neurosong Music Therapy Services. So email me feedback, as I'd love to hear your thoughts about what you liked and what we can do in the future. You can email us at janice@heartbeatmusictherapy.net or leave a comment on themusictherapyshow.blogspot.com. I'd like to thank Blog Talk Radio for hosting the show. Thanks also to blogspot.com for hosting the blog. And thanks to all of you who listen to the show each week. I really appreciate it, and I would love to hear from you. Thank you, Carlos, for being my guest. You were fantastic, and I really appreciate it. That's Dr. Charles Carlos Gorgi, and check out his site at musicishope.org. We'll be back next week at our usual time, Saturday at 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central, on blogtalkradio.com, and I look forward to talking with all of you in the future. In the meantime, check out our blog at themusictherapyshow.blogspot.com. If you have any comments or questions, please leave a comment on the blog, and we'll talk about it next week. Have a great evening. See you next week on Music Therapy Show with Janice Harris.